Good morning, neighbors. I'm your host of Open Mic, Dan Mitchell. Over the course of the next 50 minutes, we'll be concentrating on the city of Keene, the surrounding area, and law and order. Our special guest this morning is the police chief of the city of Keene. Ken Mayola joins us. He's here to take your questions, comments regarding the city of Keene and law enforcement. Good morning, Chief. Glad you could join us.
Good morning, Dan. Thanks for having me.
Nice to have you here. You've been chief now for 7 months, so you're new as being chief, but how long had you been a member of the Keene Police Department?
In October, I'll have 21 years with the Keene Police Department.
21 years. How many policemen and women does the city of Keene have?
Currently, our total staffing, when we're up to full strength, is 46 sworn personnel. So currently, realistically, on the street now, we have 7 openings.
What sort of a person do you look for when people apply to become police officers? You know, what sort of background do they need? I would imagine with the economy being the way it is and some folks out of a job, maybe they think, well, I'm young enough, maybe I'll be a cop. What's it take to be a cop?
Hey folks, Sam Dotson here from ObscuredTruth.com. I'm going to inject a few comments here while I'm editing. And while I think Dan's question is a good one, the question that you really need to ask is, what kind of people are attracted to policing? And I think there's two kinds. I think there's the police who really want to do a good job, who want to help the community, who got in it for the right reasons. And then there's those who are attracted to the power, who want to wield that power over others. I mean, what other organizations can you go out, shoot people, tase people, use billy clubs and mace, all the while having an organization that protects you and ensures that you see little to no consequences for your actions other than maybe a paid vacation?
Well, you know, realistically, there's no one model. You look for people who display common sense, who are good problem solvers, who are courageous in some sense, because ultimately you're dealing with situations that, while people are running from it, you have to inject yourself into it.
Yeah, like when they're pulling people over for speeding or caging people for harmless plant matter?
There's no really one type of person we see. You know, we've got a myriad of people with master's degrees, some people with high school educations, people come out of the military. So it's really a broad level of experience we see coming to us. And as we put them through our process, that's really when we get down to the details, you will, of how did they live their life, what have their experiences been, did they make good choices as an adult or as a youth.
So what does he mean by good choices? I'm guessing good choices are the ones the government agrees with, and bad choices are the ones that go against the current government policy, which would then create an environment where you only have police who believe in the law and who are willing to enforce the government policy because it's something that they agree with.
There's a lot that goes into it. It's not one mold person we look for. We run 3 shifts throughout the 24-hour cycle. One is day shift, which runs from 6:45 in the morning to 4:45 in the evening. We have a second shift that starts at 4:30 in the evening to 2:30 in the morning. And then our third shift is 9 at night to 7 in the morning. So we have some overlap for that 6 hours where we have actually 2 shifts running. Now, our officers work 4 10-hour days, so they have 3 days off in a row. And they bid, actually, we have a process where they bid their shifts. So based on seniority, you can bid which shift you want to work on.
And by bid, you mean I want that shift.
That's it.
and you, based on your seniority, those folks get the
correct
shifts.
So it's not based on the needs of the community or the individual skills that the people themselves can bring to the shift. It sounds like they're not using disciplinary action or customer complaints as a disincentive either. No, you heard right. What's most important and what's rewarded by this organization is how long you've managed to keep the same job.
The question that came up when the mayor was here had to do with police officers walking downtown. Last night, you and I were actually at the same event, and I happened to notice while we were there on Main Street, a couple of police officers walking by. The question had to do with basically the financing of these positions.
You know, we recognize, based upon the history of the complaints we've been getting downtown, really the quality of life issues that have been impacting downtown, that we always got numerous calls about, and we always had this Band-Aid approach to it, that we try to quell it, resolve it, and hope it went away and it didn't repeat itself. And then that really wasn't the case. I've always believed in a strong presence downtown, the ability to have people on foot, to really go back to the basics of police work, to get to know the downtown and the merchants and the people who play and reside down there.
You know, that sounds like a good idea on its face under the government monopoly on force paradigm that we have today with government police. However, in a private market, if I've got competing private protection providers out there, I'd like to think that if I was in one of those problem areas, that, you know, they would make an effort to protect my neighborhood, to ensure that it's a safe place, because if I didn't, I could fire them and I could go hire somebody who would. When it comes to the government police, you get whatever this man decides for 35,000 people. And of course, he's being directed by some busybody city councilor who thinks, well, we need more police downtown.
You know, we developed a program, really a downtown foot patrol program, that doesn't impact our budget whatsoever. Realistically, what we're doing is we're taking the officers who are already on duty for that day, and they're each carving out 1 hour of their shift to be downtown to walk the beat, so to speak. If there's emergency calls come in and the call load becomes overwhelming, we're pulling them off that detail to send them out to do emergency calls. So there's no impact to service anywhere in the city. There might be a delay in response if it's a non-emergency call. We may not pull the downtown officer. We may have whatever zone unit is covering that area. The dispatchers might stack that call until that officer is free in that zone to then go and respond to that complaint if it's of a non-emergency type call. Emergencies get immediate response, and we'll pull our downtown officer to go do that if need be.
How many officers are on duty at any one time?
It varies. Our minimum deployment standards are the basic number we always have to have on it. And currently, for the early morning shifts, we have 3 officers and a supervisor on duty.
Those are basically like the overnight shift.
Correct.
Of, right.
As you start to get into the day, when the volume of calls starts to get a little busier, we have a minimum of 4 officers on with a supervisor. And as we get into the evening hours, it's a minimum of 5 officers plus a supervisor. Now, those are just the minimums. When we are up to full staff, it could actually be 5, 6 officers on, perhaps up to 10, 12, 13 at any given point in time, depending how the shifts are played out and how we move people around to get coverage of the busy times.
Our guest this morning is Ken Maiola. He's the police chief here in the city of Keene. If you have a question or a comment about law enforcement and how the police department operates here in the city of Keene, we certainly welcome you on the program. I think that when it comes to crime in the city of Keene, Chief, we go through cycles. I think the last time that Chief Walker was here, before you had taken over, we were kind of going through a spat of some break-ins. There had been a couple of violent crimes, so to speak. Things seem to have, you know, calmed down a little bit as far as that is concerned. Do you agree that it's cyclical? What causes those cycles? Does it have anything to do with the economy? Does it have to do with the seasons, meaning spring and summer comes about, people are more active when it comes to break-ins, whether it's in the cars and the homes?
Yeah, you know, I would agree it is cyclical. You know, and it is, as you try to look back over these trends and try to determine what's occurring and why to try to combat them into the future, you realize...
I want you guys to notice his plan is to fight and combat these problems out into the future, not to look for the root cause, not to try and solve the problem, not to gain greater understanding as to why these crimes are being committed, how they're coming about, but to keep fighting and fighting and fighting.
There's really no specific detail you can pick out or trend you can look at to try to do something about it into the future. I looked at this year compared to last year, and you know what I'm seeing is what we're seeing is assaults are down, burglaries are down, thefts are up, drug violations are up, alcohol violations seem to be pretty steady and even, DWI arrests seem to be up. So I don't know there's any one thing that really, you know, pegs the needle one way or another.
When you say thefts are up, burglaries are down, what's the difference between a theft and a burglary?
A burglary is someone enters your home that doesn't have authority to be there and steals property from your home. They break into your residence, they steal property from it. A theft could be your bike stolen off your front porch, something stolen out of your car.
Or something stolen like that. Now, that is something over the years, whether we look at 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, that just seems to be on the increase. We hear about more and more things being stolen out of cars, things being stolen from homes. More recently, I guess, even home invasions, where it doesn't matter if you're home or not, people are breaking into homes and, you know, tying you up and holding you at knife point or whatever and stealing things. This seems to be the crime that we hear about, read about the most in the city of Keene. What's driving these crimes? Is it the economy and people just looking for money? How much does drug addiction have to do with that? We hear about people needing money, so they break into cars, they steal radar detectors or MP3 players or cameras. Obviously, fencing them someplace to get money.
To get money for drugs, Dan. That's what police officers will tell you causes 90% of the robberies, the thefts, the burglaries. All of it is because these are sick people who are addicted to drugs who need help rather than a punitive system that wants to throw them in a cage and then force all the rest of us to pay for it.
You know, historically, thefts out of cars have always been a problem. Every summer, every fall, we experience those on a pretty, you know, I'd have to go back and look at the specifics of it, but those occur all the time. And those are just crimes of opportunity that, you know, we would encourage people to lock their car doors, and it eliminates a lot of these issues because we're really not seeing a lot of thefts out of cars where people are breaking the window to get in and steal that radar detector. It's they're looking for that opportunity where the door is unlocked and they'll rifle the contents and take whatever they deem valuable to them. So, you know, you could surmise or you could speculate that, you know, drugs play a part of some of this. But it's not always the case. I mean, we've had cases where obviously people were stealing to buy drugs, but we've also had cases where, you know, people were not addicted to drugs and they were just stealing because that's what they chose to do. So it's really hard for me to sit here and say, yeah, these are all drug related. They're not.
It's only 90%+.
How hard is it to crack those cases, to find those people when it comes to what sort of clues are left behind to find the people that are breaking into homes or stealing things from the cars? Is it difficult to find them and prosecute?
It's the, you know, the burglaries, pretty much, I think we're fairly successful in solving those because a lot of times people will go on that tangent of committing multiple burglaries and eventually they will leave some evidence behind or someone will call in with a vehicle description or a personal description of them, and we're able to put those cases together. The thefts out of cars are a little more difficult to solve unless we happen across them or unless residents at the time they're occurring maybe hear something outside and call us and we can go investigate those. When people call us when they're occurring, that's our best ability to catch it in progress.
So it sounds like the more people, the more eyes out watching for crime, the better off, the easier it is. I think private protection services would install cameras if I wanted around my house to sort of capture that kind of thing and provide that sort of evidence, which the government police would never even consider doing. And you're far more likely to have competing firms with customers in the same neighborhoods, which means overlapping patrols and more eyes looking out for you.
Again, good advice, though, now, and times have changed, obviously. Lock your home, lock your car, don't leave bicycles on the front porch, don't leave things where they can be stolen, because they can be stolen.
Because government police can't protect you.
Right. Yeah, you know what? And it's common sense. And I don't know how many times people say, well, I'm not going to lock my door. They're going to get in if they want to get in. But what my experiences have shown me that if you make it difficult for them to get in, they're going to go to the next place.
Yeah, because they want it to be easy. They want it to be fast.
Correct.
Thanks for waiting. You're first on the air with the chief. Good morning.
The question I have, is there any requirement anymore about bicycle registration? When I was a youngster, I remember having my bicycle confiscated one time because I hadn't paid the 50 cents to get the sticker to stick on the back fender.
Keene City Ordinances, Section 94461, Registration Required. No city resident shall operate or use a bicycle on any of the public ways. Registration of bicycles will be mandatory for city residents only. So let's see if Ken gets this one right.
Yeah, there is an ability to register your bicycle within the city of Keene.
An ability? It's the law!
And there's no cost to it now, so
oh.
It's free of charge, and you can do that at the Keene Police Department at the records window. There is an ability to register it. It's not something that we go out and enforce. If the registration part really is the benefit of the bike owner, that if it gets stolen and dumped somewhere, we can get it back to you. We can go to our records and say, find out who owns it and get it back to them. Or if it is stolen, we can use that registration to identify who it belonged to. So it's not something we go out and enforce. I wouldn't want to be, seizing bicycles from young kids trying to get back and forth.
Putting a Denver boot on the bike.
No, not at all.
Now, there's two very important things to point out here. One, that there are laws, statutes, and ordinances, in this case an ordinance, that is on the books, which Ken Miola is choosing not to enforce. Now, that sounds like a good idea. The danger is if the police don't like somebody, they can target them and single them out and apply this statute to them. Because you'll notice Ken doesn't call for abolishing it or removing it from the books so that it's eliminated. The threat needs to stay around so that down the road, if they need to take someone's property or extort further money from them to really teach them a lesson, this ensures that avenue is left open. If Ken means what he says, I hope that he will talk to the city council and get this removed from the books, transforming the bike registration service into a truly voluntary program.
Chief, I want to congratulate the department for the way they handled the incident in Central Square. For the last year or so, we've had to put up with the people down there flaunting their pot and all the other things in the general public. And actually, I think they are causing a lot of damage to the downtown area, in particular the businesses, because they're down there and they're disregarding the law and they've been getting away with it.
I can assure this caller the impact of businesses downtown is minuscule when compared to the impact government has on these same businesses. They have all of their rules and regulations and statutes and building ordinances. There are sign permits. There are business permits. You have to get permits if you want balloons out front. They tried to regulate what color people could paint their buildings. They've kept other businesses closed for months while they pay rent, get no income because they're closed while jumping through the hoops that the city council chooses to put up. According to Mary Ruart's book, Healing Our World, if we leave all of these inefficiencies behind, we would see an increase of wealth of over 7 times our current level. Sadly, this man is calling for slave-on-slave violence. Under chattel slavery, when one of the slaves would escape the plantation, there would typically be others who would get mad because they saw the slaves running away as stealing from master. Master gave them a pretty good life. If they're one of the good slaves who has to follow all the master's rules, then so should everybody else.
So I just want to congratulate you with the way the police officers handled the last incident with the beer drinking and other stuff. And I'm just wondering, I hope this will continue on, and hopefully a little stronger enforcement will discourage these people from doing that. And if they arrest them enough times, maybe the judge will deem them habitual offenders and send them away.
Yeah, lock them up. And that way the whole community can be victimized when they're forced to pay and feed the prison lobby.
Well, you know, thank you for your nice comments. But, you know, we've always taken a temperate approach to this, not to try and be heavy-handed, to monitor the situation as best as we can, depending on personnel and call volumes. And when we arrive based upon complaints or behavior we're witnessing,
take a mental note. It's based on complaints and behavior they're witnessing.
That it's really our actions are all based upon, is there probable cause to take some legal action and to arrest and to bring that incident to court? And that's really what it's all based upon. And numerous times we've been down there monitoring situations based upon complaints, and behavior's never risen to the level where we could take some legal action, and therefore we didn't. I'd hate to anyone to think we're targeting specific behavior because we don't particularly agree with someone's viewpoints. That's not the case at all. We respond to complaints of unlawful activity. If we witness them, we take legal action per state law and per our policies.
So now it's based on complaints, state law, and their policies, which include discretion.
And let's talk about the situation on Central Square. I know that a lot of folks are upset about it. And it's interesting to me. I heard people say, well, I don't really mind them doing this, but I really mind having them do that. Some people are just fed up with the whole situation and the fact that, and I talked about this on the air yesterday, the number one spot that people think of when they think of Keene, our landmark, is Central Square and the Big White Church, right, and our beautiful Main Street.
Dan, we don't own the church or the square, and it's not our main street. It's individual property owners with varying beliefs and opinions that make up the areas that you're talking about.
And the whole property has been co-opted for a better part of the day, each day, 7 days a week, by these folks who have their right to display their feelings and their opinions about certain issues. But it also prevents families and other folks from wanting to go out and stroll around.
Dan, this is what's known as tragedy of the commons, with so-called public property, because everybody owns it and everybody is forced to pay for it. Nobody really owns it, and these kind of conflicts are quite common. Whereas when you have private property or private parks, Disney's a great example here, you can get both. You can have the kids' area that's the theme park, and then you can also have Pleasure Island for the adults.
That part of Main Street, or even now have the kids looking out the window when we're talking about,
right,
you know, partial nudity.
Partial nudity, Dan? Isn't that kind of like being sort of pregnant? The definition of nude is having no clothing, naked, permitting or featuring full exposure of the body. Words are important when they shape the discussion.
Where's the line in the sand? What would make you or others on duty, police officers, say, we'll leave them alone, it's okay, as opposed to, they've crossed the line, we're going to act? And we know that there was some arrests this past Sunday. Where is that line? That question comes up is, what's an arrestable offense? What isn't? Why do they leave them alone? Or why did they make arrests as they did on Sunday?
I think there's this misconception to some degree that we've left them alone. And that's not the case at all. We monitor what they do.
Now, that is true. Some people hold up beers and wave to the cops.
We try to keep an eye on it. Again, sometimes it's just personnel and lack of it to really adequately monitor it. But based upon complaints from the public, we do go and investigate and we act upon it.
Based on complaints, they investigate and act.
It's, I guess they have the opinion that it's legal and they're going to do it to some degree relative to being topless. We have to respect the fact that it's not against the law. And we don't have to agree with how they're going about it. But, part of what we do in law enforcement is protect their right to express themselves within the parameters of the law. And if that's how they choose to express themselves, then there's really not much we can do about that. Relative to the open containers of alcohol and the smoking of marijuana, those are things that we're not going to just cast aside, that we're going to pay attention to, and when we are legally able to take some action, when the probable cause exists for us to do something, we're going to do it.
Which means in the case of open containers, collecting a 2-ounce sample of the alcoholic beverage for each person that they ticket, sending that off to the crime lab for an expensive analysis to ensure it has the proper alcohol content. And because these are liberty activists, they're unlikely to take a plea. They'll likely schedule a costly, time-consuming trial in an already overburdened New Hampshire court system, which, according to one of the chief justices over a year ago, has never faced a budget crisis this bad. That's right, they'll spend thousands in an attempt to collect less than $100, but don't worry, you'll pay for it all.
As far as the complaints, and does it take a complaint to even have the police respond?
Not at all. If our officers are on patrol and see someone drinking, for example, a beer in Central Square, they're going to stop and deal with that.
Unless they don't, because they continue using discretion as they have in the past. But maybe there's a new policy.
There is a video that's been online over the course of the last week following the arrests on Sunday. And I've also had people comment to you. About how the police department and what the law is when it comes to what some of these people say to the police officers, how they act and react to the police officers, whether it's blocking a cruiser, touching a police officer, and even the words that they say. I mean, in my own opinion is the police officers have shown an amazing amount of restraint compared to what a normal individual might take when it comes to the things being said at the police department.
Well, you know what? The courts have said our peace can't be disturbed as a police officer, that
unless you're Eli Rivera, the guy running for sheriff, because that's exactly what he claimed and charged me with. Notice that he also said New Hampshire police can't claim to be the victim of disorderly conduct. That's a claim only private citizens can make.
People merely shouting angry words at us to some degree are not crimes in and of themselves. But I think what you see on that video is exactly what you said, is that the officers being very professional, very calm about the situation.
Now, I have to give them some credit here. I've interacted with a lot of police, and I have to say I think Keene are some of the most professional that are out there. And I also think over the last year, the way in which they respond has improved by several magnitudes.
Dealing with the people they had to deal with without inciting the situation further, I've seen the video, and I have to say I'm very proud of the way the officers approach this, as they have all these situations in the past. They're not getting baited into these larger scale issues that these groups would like to bait them into.
These individuals are people who have had enough of government interfering in their daily lives, telling them how to live when their actions are harming no one else. They simply want to be left alone, and it is in fact police who come up and keep enforcing their authority and their will and their laws and statutes and ordinances on everyone.
Looking for the opportunity to incite or really aggravate an
officer.
You think
they're purposely trying to provoke an officer into something that might get that officer into trouble?
It's what it appears to me, and that's my personal opinion about it, but I've seen a number of their videos, and each time I see the officers acting very calmly and professionally, and the group acting irrationally and angrily.
How many discussions then have to go on within the police department, whether it's weekly meetings or whatever, about warning the police officers that this is what they're attempting to do?
None. You know, the training we give our officers and the professionalism they display on a daily basis takes care of that. You know, we hire top-notch people to be police officers in the city of Keene, and, you know, they come with a lot of these skills themselves. They're not going to get drawn into those useless debates or those endless debates or get angered by what someone is saying. I think as you watch those videos, what you see are the officers doing their job professionally, calmly as they've been trained to do, and not allowing the situation to de-escalate any further than it needs to.
I hope he meant escalate. Take a mulligan.
Thanks for waiting. You're next on the air with the chief. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. It's Ian with FreeKeene.com. How are you?
Speak of the devil.
Oh, that's a nice thing to say. So here I am. Obviously, one of the people that was arrested on Sunday as your officers were attempting to kidnap a nice young lady from the park who was just enjoying a simple beer in the park. But real quick, I just wanted to say, as far as break-ins are concerned, you kind of played it down a little bit, Ken. Every time I've ever talked to one of your officers about break-ins in this town, they'll always tell me that, you know, when you talk to the perp, that it was for drug purposes. Sure, there's probably the occasional teenager that's bored, but for the most part, people that, from what I can tell, across the country, the epidemic of break-ins and property crime, theft, and that sort of thing is coming from people that need to get money for their drug habit, which, of course, we all know the reason why drugs are so expensive is because of prohibition. So I'm wondering, Ken, when you're going to join law enforcement against prohibition?
Great question. Let's see how open Ken is to learning about new perspectives.
Never. I believe in you know, enforcing the drug laws that are on the books. We've had this conversation, Ian. You're never going to convince me otherwise. The violence and the crimes that occur, that you have this, you know, false sense of let's legalize them and they'll be cheap and nobody will be a drug addict anymore is ridiculous. It just doesn't work.
I didn't say no one would be a drug addict anymore. It's just the difference would be the drug addicts wouldn't be breaking and entering and threatening people, holding up convenience stores, that sort of thing, in order to get their money for their habit.
Do you know,
the folks over at Leap do a good job of explaining that.
Do you know, Ian, if there are any statistics about people who are alcoholics that aren't able to hold down a job that have to resort to forms of crime? Everything from illegal panhandling to actually theft or burglary to support that habit?
I don't know if there are those statistics. That's a good question. I would say that clearly you do have panhandlers out there, but most people that purchase their alcohol are doing it through the, you know, legal marketplace with money that they earned at their job.
You know, Ian, I would just say, this is my opinion on it, that as long as there is a cost to buy drugs, whether they're legal or illegal, people will commit crimes to get them.
Sure, but how many people are committing crimes to buy a bottle of aspirin?
I can't even answer that question. I don't know.
Not very many, because aspirin is cheap due to the fact that it's available legally in the marketplace.
Well, I don't think aspirin is an addictive substance like heroin or crack is, so, or methamphetamine. So
I think you're
comparing two different things here. You can't even make that comparison.
If you made that comparison, use my comparison to find out how many crimes are related to alcohol addiction. We heard all the time about when they wanted to move the jail to Keene and building this new jail, how many people that are incarcerated have addiction to alcohol. That tells me then that criminals and alcohol can be linked. And alcohol is a legal drug. It's also an addictive drug. And it's one that is controlled by the state and the federal government as well. But there's an example of people not being able to control their addiction as well.
Except that alcohol impairs both judgment and motor skills, which is why most crimes related to alcohol are from drunk drivers the police have failed to catch. They're not breaking into people's houses to get a six-pack.
Good morning.
Good morning, guys.
Hi.
Good morning.
Recently, we've had some officers that have made some bad choices. And my question is it standard procedure to pay an officer when he's on administrative leave?
Absolutely. They are swiftly punished with a property tax-funded, fully paid vacation for free. Of course, the police may be shorthanded, so then you're going to start paying overtime as well. But don't worry, this is about the law, and these men uphold the law.
Well, I think, first of all, let's clarify the fact that no Keene police officers have been involved in any of those situations. If you're referring to some of the things that have been in the paper on the Seacoast and perhaps in Massachusetts, then, you know, it's like everything else when we talk about administrative leave. If someone's simply been accused of something, automatically we don't pronounce them guilty of it.
Right. Ken referenced this earlier when he talked about probable cause and taking legal action. Basically, if a citizen complains of criminal behavior and the officers either believe that it exists or witness it themselves, then they'll issue a citation, or if it's serious enough, they'll place the person immediately under arrest, where they'll be brought before a magistrate the next day. Or if it's a felony crime, they'll also write up an information and submit it to the grand jury for their own investigation. That's how the law works, and this is about the law, right, Ken?
So there is a process. There are labor laws that play. There are contractual obligations that come into play that give the officer due process when they've been in trouble to kind of give time for the situation to get investigated and to see what occurred. So, you know, immediately administrative leave is a good idea because it takes that officer out of any situation could possibly get into that could cause perhaps more trouble. It gives the department the ability to really investigate what occurred. And then at some point or other, depending upon which way the investigation goes, administrative pay would be suspended or they would be reinstated. And, you know, there's a process. And I think that's why to give the officer the benefit of the doubt and not just to pronounce them guilty is why that happens.
Wait, this is a glaring double standard. While we face immediate jail time while you continue your investigation, your officers are getting paid vacations. Not to mention the fact you're investigating yourselves.
Morning, Dan. How you doing?
Doing well, thanks.
Hey, as someone who's not always been a huge promoter of the police, I think that the police has done, the team police has done an outstanding job being using a lot of restraint and following what doing what they were supposed to be doing. But my question, Dan, is why do you give these guys a form, you know, and have them on the radio?
On the radio station on Saturday
yeah.
nights?
Yeah.
I get asked that, well, a little more frequently now, and the answer really hasn't changed over the years. It is a different point of view. It gives them a chance, and let's face it, it's a national show, not so much a local show, to have their point of view expressed. And if they weren't doing it there, it would be more and more often calling into our local talk shows, too, I think, as well. And that's part of the idea of people later on not being able to say, well, you favor one group over another, one organization over another, one point of view over another. Believe it or not, I also get a lot of calls saying, why can't they have more AR time? And I say, well, let's just leave it to the 3 hours a week when Red Sox baseball isn't on. By the way, it does get preempted quite a bit, especially in the summertime. But
yeah, I just think that it gives them a little air of legitimacy. And they're really, I mean, they're like a bunch of adult two-year-olds who just scream and yell when they don't get their way. But it's kind of ridiculous that they're protesting about going topless, but yet that's not illegal. But somehow they're protesting something that's not illegal.
Why bother doing something that isn't illegal? I guess maybe then saying they're protesting, they're just taking advantage of the fact that it isn't illegal.
Maybe it's not a protest. Maybe it was just a few people enjoying their day in the park, or five people as it started out on Sunday. But labeling it a protest seems to be really important to the adults who resort to name-calling.
They're just a bunch of, like I said, adult two-year-olds who scream and yell when they don't get their way.
If people disagree with you, all you have to do is ask people who are libertarians or members of the Free State Movement that live in other parts of the state of New Hampshire or other parts of the country and ask their opinion about the behavior of the ones in Keene, and you'll find that they'll probably side more with you than with people within their own quote-unquote group.
It's funny you should mention this, Dan, because those same people were complaining about the overwhelming number of voluntarists and Free Keene supporters at the recent Pork Fest, which was attended by estimates are from 800 to 1,000 people.
Like I said, I just wish you wouldn't give them any kind of legitimacy.
Free Talk Live's on well over 80 stations.
Giving them a couple hours on your radio show.
Well, I think they know, too, that if at some point they push the limits too far, then they won't have that privilege anymore, too. Like any other group or organization. Appreciate the phone call, and I know the chief appreciates the kind words. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. It's Sam Dotson. So, Ken, I hear a lot of common phrases here that it's about the law, that you have to enforce the law, that if you get a citizen complaint, then you have to go in and, you know, see to that complaint and make sure that it's addressed. And also the other point is that if you don't like the law, then you should use the system to change the law because the police can't do anything until, you know, that's been done. So my question is, if you got a call on a Sunday to come out to a Little League soccer field or baseball field or whatever because of a citizen complaint, would you go out there and start arresting Little Leaguers because it's against the law to play games on a Sunday?
That's not even a realistic question. Playing Little League or soccer is not against the law.
It's dishonest to say that's not a real question, because that's a real law that's on the books, and somebody calling to the police saying there's criminal activity going on, please come out here and stop it. Would you go out there and start arresting Little Leaguers and suggest that the parents be turned over to Child Protective Services, since they're encouraging their kids to engage in criminal behavior?
It's not against the law. I don't understand where you're going with this.
Is there an old blue law, Sam, on the books about that?
Absolutely there is, Dan. They were talking about repealing it a few months ago, but they didn't.
Yeah.
So clearly they still want it enforced.
How much do social norms have to do with this, Chief, too, about what's acceptable and what's not? Obviously, the general public likes the idea of people playing baseball on Sundays. However, they don't like people drinking beer on our central square, smoking pot or going naked.
I think historically, if you look back at the city ordinances in the city of Keene, it was before my time, before I got here, but they did allow consumption of alcohol in public with open containers and such.
I do remember when that was still legal.
And it was my understanding that it became so rowdy and so downtrodden downtown for people just to go downtown and enjoy it.
As Ken mentioned earlier, under their rules, a private citizen can claim to be the victim of disorderly conduct, whereby police who are unable to make such a claim are thereby empowered to act under the disorderly conduct statutes. The policeman can then go investigate for himself, determine that the statutes are being met and that the person is acting disorderly. He can ask them to leave. If they refuse to leave, he can be arrested. There are already laws on the books for public intoxication. And if somebody is actually causing harm, well, then there's assault and theft and so forth.
That's actually what brought the open container law into existence, that this community said that's no longer acceptable to us. The behavior that emanates from it is not acceptable, and therefore we're enacting this city ordinance to combat it into the future to return the luster to the downtown. That's always been my understanding of it, as I understand it. So
what Ken's really saying is that despite all of this behavior being already illegal, police were powerless to prevent it and were a miserable failure. And rather than accepting their failure, their solution that they came up with was to take away everyone's freedom and then threaten those who violate their rules with either jail or extortion.
It seems to make sense to me. It seems they've done the trick, and that's why the laws are on the books, and that's why we enforce them.
Sam, we appreciate the phone call and the question.
Okay, that sounds great. So if the laws are on the books and that's why you enforce them, then when I call the police on the Little League game on a Sunday, I can expect you and your men to show up and start arresting kids. Wouldn't it just be easier if you admitted that police have discretion and that you guys use your discretion, which is based on your judgment of the law, to determine whether or not you enforce it? Of course, that would require police to actually own up to the moral implications of their actions rather than hiding behind the costume that they wear or some words written down on pieces of paper.